All the world's a stage, and all the men and women, merely players. They have their exits and their entrances. One man in his time plays many parts.
I was manned for the stage. I was manned for the curtain.
Hello, this is Kevin Barrett. I don't know if I was meant for the stage, but I was definitely meant for this radio show. Truth Jihad Radio, that is. It's the only radio show that's actually an all-out struggle for truth. So please, help keep this show on the air. Go to truthjihad.com. For $3.95 a month, you can subscribe and get early access to all these shows. Or, if you prefer, you can make a one-time donation and help this show stay on the air. That's truthjihad.com.
Mother, please be proud. Father, be forgiving. Even though you told me, son, you'll never make a living. Oh, oh.
Welcome to Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett, bringing you all of the important information that's actually too important to breathe a word about in the corporate-controlled mainstream. Some of this information is so sensitive that people get harassed, shut down, sound systems get sabotaged. There apparently are forces in the world that are really intent on forcing us to believe the mainstream narrative of the so-called War on Terror, the series of apparent false flag attacks that have served as the PR stunts to drive home this concept of the War on Terror into the subconscious and the consensus reality of the populations of the West and of the world. And when you start questioning these false flags, such as the recent attacks in Paris and San Bernardino, you are opening yourself up to being attacked by the powers that be. The book We Are Charlie Hebdo last year was attacked by the French government. Jean Jaurès Institute think tank came after me personally, presumably for editing the book We Are Not Charlie Hebdo, but I'm not going to back down. We're working on a new book right now. Its tentative title, which I think is pretty much the final title because we're going to churn this thing out within a week. It's called Another French False Flag, Bloody Tracks from Paris to San Bernardino. And here to talk about that topic is one of my favorite regular guests, Ole Domencart. Ole is a Europe-based researcher into assassinations and false flags. He's done all kinds of great work. We've had him on many times, and so it's great to have him back to talk about these recent outrages. Welcome, Ole. How are you?
I'm so good. Thank you, and thank you for having me back again, Kevin. I just have to applaud what you did going back to Paris after this latest one. I think that was absolutely amazing. Well done.
Yeah, you're talking about the False Flag Islamophobia Conference, which I had to organize because even though my paper was accepted at the mainstream Islamophobia and Civil Society Conference organized by folks from the University of California, Berkeley, they informally let me know that despite having had my paper accepted by the conference, I shouldn't go there to present it because it was just impossible in the hysterical atmosphere after these Paris attacks. So I flew to Paris anyway, attended that conference, even though I was not invited to present my paper, raised my concerns in the question answer period, and then with Professor Tony Hall of the University of Lethbridge, co-hosted the False Flag Islamophobia Conference from Paris. And I was kind of amazed, Ole, that I wasn't stopped, questioned, or hassled in any way by the authorities while doing this.
I tell you, I think they don't want to stir too much attention. They want us to be quiet, but they don't want to do things that can really get big reactions. I think that might be what do you sort of explanation on why you were not touched at all.
Yeah, in the past, whenever I've been hassled, harassed, dragged on Fox News, questioned by the FBI, turned down for at the border, refused entry into Canada, all this sort of thing, it generally has simply redounded as better publicity for what I'm doing.
Exactly.
Maybe they finally learned their
lesson. It backfires.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about what really happened in Paris and San Bernardino. Starting with Paris, you know, I flew out of Paris the day of the attacks. I just got out of Paris hours before the shooting started, and people suddenly were blowing up outside the stadium. And, oh, man, I kind of felt like it was almost, you know, there was a weird personal connection. As you know, the first time I go back to Paris in, what, 20 years or something, suddenly more than 20 years, 25 years, suddenly this all breaks out. And the night before the terrorist attack, I was walking around Paris giving interviews about how Charlie Hebdo had been a false flag. So the whole thing was very strange for me. And, you know, Ola, you're very familiar with the issue of false flag terrorism in Europe. I imagine that your first reaction this time, like my first reaction, was this is almost certainly a false flag. But even before we saw the evidence coming in, you could sort of get it just from the context.
I think it's really, really important when you come to a crime scene not to just jump into conclusions without really looking into the evidence. But during this last year or the last few years, it's been absolutely crazy what has been going on. And I've come to the point after some 30 years of really deep investigation into this area that what I really truly believe what we're seeing is like a terror tour, like a theater group on a global terror tour, being used by the powers behind the New World Order. But I believe that we are seeing the same people running around in SWAT team uniforms in Paris, as in Ottawa, as in Sydney, as in Copenhagen, as in, and so on. The same crisis actors, the same media people in the background, the same marketing agencies, the same directors, and so on. So instead of which is great news, I think, because then instead of us living in a totally crazy, mad world filled with terror attacks and so on, we're looking at a small little, like a rock group on a global tour, just repeating their same performance again and again and again, flown from country to country in army planes or neutral planes, and then being transported to location in buses and so on, helped by local backups and so on. I spoke to Chip Tatum, the CIA whistleblower, about this, and he said it's not only possible, it's very probable that this is exactly what is going on.
So we're talking about a troop of traveling terror troubadours coming soon to a theater of operations near you.
Yeah, that is my deep conviction, and what I've done a lot of work is to try and identify people in the background, people in the uniforms, and so on. There's a reason why these police SWAT teams and so on nowadays are running around with face masks, you know, and balaclavas. It's because they don't want us to recognize them. They say it's for their protection, but I say, what is the difference nowadays when you look at what a so-called terrorist looks like and a SWAT team? And I would also suggest that is why very, very often when these false flags or terror attacks are carried out, the shooters, like now in Paris and San Bernardino and so on, are dressed in dark army-looking clothes. And the reason for that is they go in, they do the shooting, they disappear behind furniture or somewhere inside a building. The police, the SWAT teams arrive. The police attacks, they go in, maybe 10 police officers in SWAT team uniforms goes in, and 12 leaves the building. Nobody notices, and the shooters are taken out from the area that way. Perfect disguise. So the only thing they have to do is put on a bulletproof vest and a balaclava, and that's it. You won't recognize them, and that's what they do. I think is it Ocean 11 or Ocean 13 or something like that, one of these Hollywood movies. They do exactly that, and that is how this is carried out as well. They did it at the JFK assassination, where one of the shooters was in a police uniform. And,
right, and there was all kinds of Secret Service ID manufactured for non-Secret Service agents.
Chauncey Holt was the one that
blew the whistle. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, no, it's the same, the same, the same. And so I was able to, thanks to you and other radio programs, able to go out in January and predict the shooting, the terror attack on Copenhagen, 1 month to the day before it happened in Copenhagen. And now the signs were very strong again that they were going to hit here in November. And I thought that the big terror attack would be in Copenhagen on the 11th of November, because there was a major terror drill there at the university. There was also a major drill, a naval drill going on outside the west coast of Denmark, where they had planned for like a nuclear disaster, two vessels that collided. And so we don't have mass shootings in Europe, more or less. There's have not been none, because the people are not armed here. That's, so they have no need to carry out false flags with mass shootings, where the gun will be the problem. So they need to be confiscated.
So here, why do you think they did this a mass shooting this time
in Copenhagen?
In France.
If I can just go Copenhagen first, and then we move to Paris.
Okay.
There was a drill with a mass shooting at the university, and Swedish police came over and were playing the terrorist, which was absolutely incredible. And then when they had all the helicopters and the SWAT teams and all of these things, and then when they came out with the two terrorists, they had put these metal blankets that we saw in Paris as well, these golden things. They made them like tinfoil hats on the two people that were the terrorists, so that when they were taken in front of all the cameras, they had tinfoil hats on, you know.
Tinfoil hat terrorists. This sounds like they're starting to demonize conspiracy theorists. We are seeing that now. We saw in Paris, they said that ISIS is now putting out a discourse about the Jewish Freemasonic Zionist conspiracy. So anybody who talks about these kinds of conspiracy theories must be part of ISIS.
Yeah. Oh, it's just ridiculous. Anyway, so when this happened in Paris, it didn't happen in Denmark. I had people on location there filming and everything, but nothing happened. And then instead, boom, 2 days later, it happened in Paris. And this time, just like the Charlie Hebdo shooting and what followed in Copenhagen in January, these were very connected as well. But this time it was Denmark first and then Paris. And so,
let's mention that. I've written about this in my introduction to this forthcoming book, Another French False Flag, that you caught the fact that the Denmark shooting last year on Valentine's Day was a sort of a sequel to the Charlie Hebdo attack. And indeed, there had been a prequel to Charlie Hebdo as well, the Mohamed Merah event. In all three of these events, we had exactly the same pattern, an attack on national values or free speech first, and then an attack on Jews, which means Zionists in this language. Mohamed Merah, it's attack on French soldiers and then a Jewish school. With Charlie Hebdo, an attack on freedom of speech and cartoonists, and then an attack on a kosher deli. And then Copenhagen, an attack on anti-Islam cartoonists and free speech, followed by an attack on a synagogue. It was exactly the same pattern, so these were linked in that sense. And here, with Paris and San Bernardino this year in November and December, it seems that we have a new pattern, which is these alleged ISIS-inspired or ISIS-run terrorists kind of randomly slaughtering people, and the victims are selected not just to be basically random, but also to be a little bit extra sympathetic. Young people enjoying themselves at rock concerts and cafes in Paris, and then staff at a facility for disabled people in California. And like, why would radical Muslims dislike these two demographics? As Alain Soral has pointed out, the people they attacked in Paris, these young people in the hip, trendy district at the Bataclan and at these other cafes in that part of Paris, were actually, that's the demographic that strongly supports the Palestinians, the last demographic that any radical Muslims would ever want to attack. And likewise, why would radical Muslims target a facility for disabled people? So we've shifted to a new pattern here where they're going after basically just random victims, you know, nobody who's insulted Islam, nobody who's part of a French military attacking Islamic countries. They're just going away after random civilians who've been selected, so basically to be sympathetic.
It is. This has nothing, in my opinion, nothing to do with ISIS. It has nothing to do with Muslims. We're talking inside jobs from the powers behind the New World Order, with totally inside help from the government on in these different countries, local police authorities and so on, the high level people, politicians in these countries and so on. We're talking about these networks where the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, these type of networks, these are the people that are pulling the strings here. This is not the job of some lone, crazy Muslim guy or a group of Muslims. Absolutely not.
And let's look at some of the evidence that has turned up to support that interpretation. Now, the things I focused on were the drills, active shooter multi-location drills that were actually running in Paris on the 13th. And then I've also focused on the eyewitness reports that there were white paramilitary types doing the shooting at the restaurant in Paris. And then we never heard anything more about that. And then I focused also on, of course, the fact that these patsies or people blamed for the shooting in Paris were well known to intelligence services and had a free ticket to go anywhere they wanted, crossing borders and so on, getting pulled over, smoking joints as they fled their crime three times and being let go, this sort of thing. So those are the issues that I've mainly focused on. But you've apparently come up with some new stuff or stuff that I haven't really covered yet, including the pre-warnings, that is, or rather, they jumped the gun, apparently, and published some items indicating foreknowledge of the attacks on Wikipedia, Twitter, and so on. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, of course. There was a Twitter account. I mean, this is the thing. You really have to look for anyone who sends out any type of signs of knowing beforehand needs to be looked at very, very closely. And here there was a Twitter account called PZ Feed Ebooks. And it 2 days before this happened, it went out and said, breaking, death toll from Paris terror attacks rises to at least 120 with 270 others injured. When I saw that, I just like, whoa, 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 hang on a second. Because that exact same Twitter account, PZ Feed Ebooks, went with the exact same tweet when there was the so-called mass shooting in Peshawar in Pakistan on, I think it was the 14th of December 2014, where one of the claimed victims was Noah Posner, that actually officially died 2 years earlier in Sandy Hook. Same photos, everything in Pakistan.
Wait a minute. Wait, was the tweet with showing foreknowledge of Pakistani, of what happened in Pakistan or not?
Yes.
It was both.
But there it said, breaking death toll from Paris, no, from Peshawar terror attack rises to at least 120 with 270 others injured.
Really?
And then
during
the Ebola outbreak, you know, the Ebola hoax, it was PC Feed Ebooks and the same, breaking death toll from Paris terror attack rises to at, no, breaking death toll from Ebola virus rises to at least 120 with 270 others injured. So the same Twitter account with the same tweet, but for three different of these operations, because I would very strongly suggest that the Ebola whole thing is also a hoax, a false flag, but when it comes to your health type of thing, to freak you out.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm going to have to subscribe to that Twitter feed. Now, how do we know? Can we be sure that these tweets really, are we absolutely certain they came out ahead of the events?
Yeah, I heard. Yeah, I had it before.
Really? So you do subscribe to this guy?
Yeah, but it's like people send me stuff, you know. So this was before because I was so focused on Copenhagen, and it came on the day of the Copenhagen one. So when I saw that, I thought, they got that a bit wrong, didn't they? And then, boom, it happened in Paris. And also, since I was so on the alert regarding Copenhagen, I was sort of checking everything because you need to be check these things on a very wide horizon to see what's going on globally. And the day before the Paris attacks, there was a YouTube account that was called Videos Paris Attack Exclusively. And that was the day before it happened with the YouTube colors with a French flag the day before it happened. And then when people started pointing at it on the 13th, it was started on November 12th, it just got deleted right away. But I have a screenshot of both of these two. Then we have wonderful Wikipedia that you have to trust, because everybody can go in and edit it, except for the people that you write about, that is written about. And less than 2 hours after the attack started in Paris, Wikipedia had a full description of the whole event with all the numbers of wounded, all the different sites of the attacks, everything, including the speech of the French president, François Hollande, about, you know, we have to close the border, all of these things. The only thing is that when we backtracked the updates from this account, when it was, at 23:06 p.m. in the evening, it was talking about the French president, François Hollande's speech to the nation. Only one slight problem. That speech was at 23:58, 2 minutes before midnight. And that was when he gave the speech, but it was already on Wikipedia, 6 past 11, 52 minutes earlier.
Wow. Sounds like somebody's getting ahead of themselves and feeding the script to the media, just like on 9/11 when we heard about Building 7 coming down 20 minutes before it did on BBC.
You know, when if you go back to the film JFK with Kevin Costner and so on, there's a man called Mr. X who explains the whole thing to Garrison, the attorney. And he was working for Pentagon and the CIA way up with black ops and these type of things. His name, real name, was Fletcher Prouty. And he was sent they wanted to get him out of the way because he was an honest, decent man. So he was sent with a group of people to the South Pole. And he was, when they killed Kennedy, and he was on his way back, he was in Christchurch on New Zealand, when he read in the newspaper about the assassination, about the whole bio, the whole story about Lee Harvey Oswald with photos and everything. And this was before Oswald was even arrested. And it's like, we're talking time differences, different countries, these type of things.
Well, that was the international dateline that Fletcher Prouty cited as the problem. It was published in the Stars and Stripes, a military newspaper, but they apparently didn't take cognizance of the international dateline. So the scriptwriters had probably said, well, publish this on such and such a day, such and such a time. They forgot about the dateline, and so Oswald was fingered as the perp in the Kennedy assassination with full background on him before he'd even been arrested.
Exactly. And Fletcher Prouty said, when I read that, I knew it was our operation. This is one of our black ops. So he knew at that very second, when a thing like this happened, that it's a black op. And here we are, identical thing, more or less. 52 minutes before it actually happens, it's already there. And this is a clear sign of a black op on a massive scale, because when you start looking on all the different areas, all the different deeds, we're talking big powers behind these things.
Right.
So also one thing that is a bit spooky is that there's a computer game called Battlefield 3. And in 2011, that was more or less the exact same date when the first attack on Charlie Hebdo was, Battlefield 3 came out with a new version. And in that, there's a terror attack on Paris on November 13. Where it's the exact same scenario, more or less.
Interesting. And that would tie in with the foreknowledge shown by the Economist cover of what will happen in 2015. It was published in late 2014. And in the lower right-hand corner of that cover, it shows symbols that look like they're referring to a possible attack on Paris. There's a Da Vinci painting in the Louvre. There's Alice in Wonderland representing a big false flag that leads everybody down the rabbit hole. And there's this number puzzle, the 6 digits. And those digits can only be arranged to form one date in 2015. And that is 11/13/15. It's actually kind of a nice date for the odd numbers, 1, 3, 5, 11, 13, 15. But that looks like they must have planned to do something big on that date well ahead of time. And what you're talking about with this video game would also support that.
Do you know, also, as soon as this happened, I felt we need to get it out as soon as possible, all the information available, or whatever I could find. So I went on Project Camelot just the day afterwards. And she said, and by the way, that interview, in the very few 4 or 5 first days, there was 38,000 hits, you know. So the interest of these things and the awareness among listeners and people around is so expanding very, very, very fast.
Well, that's right. Yeah, I got over 100,000 hits in a little over a day. Wow. With my first article, Another French False Flag, which I published shortly after it happened. And my San Bernardino article is now pushing 500,000 hits. So, yeah, fantastic. People are definitely paying attention to this. And I think it's one reason why we're seeing so much disaffection with the mainstream narrative. We're seeing the rise of these rebellious populist parties all over the West. So, let's go back. We've got all these indications of foreknowledge and scripted black ops.
Let me just say one more, because Carrie Cassidy at Project Camelot, she told me that she had just been contacted by someone in London that saw Wembley being lit up in the French colors 1 hour before it actually happened in France.
Really? Well, that would be...
There were all of these buildings in Sydney and Stockholm and other of these countries that were lit up during the night afterwards. But here, 1 hour before it actually happened, people saw Wembley being lit up.
Now, did anyone get a picture of that with a time and date code on the picture?
I do not know.
We will have to look for that. If any of our listeners can find that, that would be worth finding. All kinds of foreknowledge. And there's also this potential sort of satanic element here. It seems that the people who do these things are interested in numerology, and they're interested in various kind of symbols of ritual human sacrifice. I've discussed this with regard to 9/11 with Tom Bradenbach several times. Fascinating stuff. Here in Paris, the only picture that was released of the carnage in the Bataclan nightclub shows bodies apparently having been dragged around the floor to create almost a painting of a heart shape in blood. Very strange picture, especially to be the only one released. Ole, I understand you've found some indications of some sort of occult or satanic connection to these attacks.
It's like there's so many of them. I'm going to go into a few of them. But that photo, one, is absolutely incredible. I want to point out that when you look at this photo, please look at the so-called... it looks like a massive big brush had been painting in the blood going around like one yard wide or 1 meter wide pattern route in a heart shape around these bodies.
And let me quickly tell the listeners that this photo will be part of the cover collage of the book Another French False Flag. This collage has been created by David Dees, perhaps the most celebrated political artist working today. And that picture, I've already had people saying, I don't know if you should put that picture on the cover. And my response was, this picture is very, very incriminating. So go ahead, Ole, tell us more about it.
Okay, if that picture is very, very interesting, I would say as well, because on the... In 2014, there was an attack in Jerusalem on November 18th, which is the day of sacrifice and the day of witches, as far as I know. It was in a synagogue, and it said that some Palestinian guys went into this synagogue and killed four people there. And you got exactly the same kind of weird blood pattern going out in a long corridor at that synagogue. That is 1 year before this happened. Very, very, but it's identical, this very strange blood pattern that it's not natural in any way or form.
Now do we have photos of this available on the internet?
I can send it to you if you want.
Okay, I'll
otherwise,
try to post that at the radio
just
blog.
See if you can Google Jerusalem attack November 18th, 2014. I'm sure you will find something similar there.
Okay.
But that pattern, it's very strange because it said that there's at least 80 people that was massacred in there, that was killed. Here we have only 25, and there's no police, there's no medical anyone there except the bodies being spread around, 25 bodies. But when you look at it, when you really try and enlarge these ones, there's especially one woman. She's lying straight on. She's the first body closest to the heart underneath it. Look at her legs. You cannot do what she's doing with her legs, being a human body. What she is, or what these bodies are, I would very much suggest are what is called Kapper bodies, you know, stunt bodies, film bodies that are used for stunt event, and these are not real bodies.
There's
quite a few, quite a few of them. When you really go into details, which is very difficult because it's not sharp, but they're lying in ways that you cannot do with a human body. And then in the down left corner, look, and there's a big open area on the floor. Where also look, there's no glass, there's no nothing, you know, which would have been there since this. There's a bar and there was a rock concert, nothing, just these bodies spread around. Look down in the left corner, and if you really enlarge it, you will see that there's a big golden death mask. And that death mask, I've been tracking. There's some very strong connections to Aztec death mask and so on. Also in the audience up in the top of the image, if you change the contrast and put a lot of light in the dark areas, there you will see that there are five or six men or persons dressed in black. And it looks like they're holding like candles or something like that. And I've compared that. I put photos in my presentations here next to each other from Satanic Rituals and the Bataclan. I mean, they're almost identical.
Wow. That's frightening. You know, I recently talked to a former Canadian intelligence officer who agrees with your interpretation. He said that the bodies in this picture, or some of them anyway, must be the dummies, not real bodies, because of the positions they're in. I haven't been able to tell yet. I guess I need to get a more high-resolution image, and because it, part of the problem is that this image is just not high enough resolution to really see what's going on. It's very suspicious on the face of it, with, you know, depicting something that normally you wouldn't expect, that these bodies would just be dragged around the floor to paint a heart in blood. I mean, is that how medical services would treat bodies?
Which body has been dragged around? How much blood is in one body, and how much to make like a meter wide pattern around there? You need a lot, you know. It almost looks like one of these cleaning vehicles, you know, in supermarkets and so on, that they've put some ketchup in instead of some cleaning fluid, you know, the ones that they drive around in airports and so on and clean the floor. It looks like they've used something like that.
Right. But the thing is, this picture is, whether or not you've looked at it closely enough to see all of the detail problems, there's just a problem with how could, this is the only picture of the carnage in the Bataclan, and it's so, what it's representing just doesn't make any sense.
Not at all. And also, you're supposed to have 1 to 4 suicide bombers that have blown themselves up inside this building as well. No signs of them at all. Nothing else. And these bodies, these stunt bodies, they're called Dapper Cadavers, by the way. If you want to go in and search on Google Images and so on, you will find a lot of these images, and you will see that very often they're lying in similar positions as some of these bodies. And I also spoke to Scott Bennett, who's a former very high-up military guy and so on, and he said that an AK-47, which is said to have been used here, of actually four shooters with AK-47. He says the impact on the human body with a weapon like an AK-47, it makes holes like an orange, like bigger than a golf ball. And here, most of these bodies, there's no holes at all. There's no blood. There's also, the blood is running in different directions away from the body. And I mean, it's a liquid, so it should run in the same direction. If the floor is going somewhat downwards or something, it would run like that for all of them. But here it goes in all different kinds of directions. There's so many things that is not correct about these images. Also, this image, we tried to find out the photo data about who took this photo. And normally you can find, you know, what camera it is, what time it was when this photo was taken and so on. Here, the photo is taken of a screen. It's a screen dump from a computer. So there's absolutely no photo ID in the photo itself.
Okay.
I think they're becoming very aware of people like myself. So they're trying to avoid all of these ways of tracking them.
So how could one find out where this photo came from? Is it possible to track where it was first published on the internet? Who published it? I mean, normally these kinds of photos would come with some sort of rights. Somebody owns them. They're worth a lot of money.
It says that if you use this image, you will have to pay 500 pounds or dollars to the rock band Eagles of Death Metal.
Really? Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm going to put this on the cover of another French false flag in the collage created by political artist David Dees as a piece of evidence suggesting that this crime needs to be investigated from a different angle. I think that's fair use. And so, Eagles of Death Metal, if you're listening to this show, please sue me.
Fair enough. And also, there's another one. Listen, that one, maybe I confused it with, there is another photo taken. There's two photos taken just minutes before. It's said to have been taken just minutes before the concert. That is the one with the copyright for Eagles of Death Metal. Sorry,
I made
a mistake.
Okay, great. Well, then I won't expect to be sued.
Well, you can, I'm sure, use that one. Have you seen this photo? You can see the whole crowd. There's all of these devil signs up in the air and so on. But when you look at that photo, there are hundreds of faces. It's just like Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Heart Club Band. It's like one of these covers. It's like a total Photoshop composite, very, very poorly done.
Yeah, well, it looks a little too good to be true to me. I did run this by Massimo Mazzucco, who is a photography expert. He's actually been looking into the moon landing photography issue. He said that no, he doesn't think the critique of that particular photo that you're talking about really holds up. He thinks that photo could be authentic.
I am so not agreeing with him. I mean, absolutely not. Come here, you're welcome to chop off my right arm if that is an authentic photo. Absolute composite. I've spent so many years with Photoshop. That is a crap job. If I'd done a job like that, I would never get paid. If you really look into details, I got a high resolution, everything. It is extremely badly done. The question is, why has anyone put such an effort into making a job like that? And not very good even. So the question, why did they do that? And there's so many of these odd things about this where it's almost like they're putting it in our face, you know. And I think we're back to the karma thing I think we discussed before, that according to people that I've been contacted from the inside, they say that the people behind the New World Order, their interpretation of the law of karma is that if you show your victim what's going to happen and the victim does not react, then the karma is on the shoulders of the victim. The attacker goes free. And this is why they put it out there right in our face. And if we do not react, it's up to us.
Well, we're reacting here.
We are indeed.
I
asked Chip Tatum about this because, I mean, he was part of taking out quite a lot of people and by the orders of George Bush Sr. and so on. And I asked him about this, and he said he never heard of it, but he said it makes total sense because he and his team always had to confront the victim verbally first and give them a chance to, what he said, to conform. And if they did not, then it was green light, he could be taken out. And he was very uncomfortable with that because he said, I was a soldier. If you wanted somebody dead, I'll sort it. But to confront this, it was so dangerous for him and his teams because you never know how anyone would react and so on. So he was very uncomfortable. But he said, we always had to do that.
So by giving them a chance to conform, meaning saying, stop doing what you're doing or else we're going to kill you?
Yeah.
Interesting.
But also, if we continue around this Bataclan thing, there's two really spooky videos that was released 1 week before. It was by an artist called Pantero 666. That's we're back to these satanic things that they love in connected to these things. And when you look at it, you can find him on the internet and so on. And it says that his music is, or it says Pantero 666 is a 666 is a combination of ancient Aztec rituals. In my world, these are blood rituals, and transients and crazy electro tribal beats. But what has ancient Aztec rituals to do with any type of music? But when you look at these two videos, you can find them. On YouTube, Bataclan Halloween videos. There's one where, and these were released just 1 week before. The first one is a young girl comes dressed. She's walking out in the forest, dressed in a white, very beautiful white dress. And she walks in the forest, and then suddenly she comes across a dance group. These people, it's like 8 or 10 young kids in white T-shirts and so on, but full with blood. They look like they have been shot to pieces, and they're dancing around. There's a song, I think it's Rihanna, where it's like shoot, 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 blood, 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 and they're doing exactly they're aiming like do, 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 when they sit, and they're looking, like zombies with blood everywhere. And then in the middle of the song, all of these in the dance group, they sort of almost lie on top of her. And then when they let her go again, she has blood on her dress. And when she looks into the camera, she walks straight into the camera. She's got like the mask of Hannibal Lecter. Then the second video, the Bataclan Halloween video, it's about a young guy where you see he's running around in the alleys right around the Bataclan, exactly where the shootings were filmed and so on from surrounding buildings and so on. You can see he's running around looking paranoid, and then he runs into the Bataclan. He goes into, and he looks around the whole open area. He walks up on stage. There's some product placement. Nike keeps coming back in this whole thing. You have these Nike logos all over the place. But then when he goes up on stage, there's a white mask, and he puts it on. And then when he takes it off, the whole place is on fire. Everybody's dancing and so on. But in this video, there's 10 photos that flashes by. There's a 25 of a second for each image, but I've got help, and I've frozen all the images, taken them out, and these images are faces of a person, and then next to it, the same type of Hannibal Lecter mask, this very, very awful mask, and there's both men and women with these masks, but one of the images, when I saw that, I enlarged it, and that woman, where you can see her face, and it's combined, it's a composite with the same woman, but with this Hannibal Lecter mask, really, really gross mask. She is the girlfriend of Nick Alexander, who was one of the victims and who was connected to the band Eagles of Death Metal. I tell you, it's the same woman. And it's the same mask as in the first video, the same Hannibal Lecter mask. And it goes stranger than that, because there was a couple that was interviewed, and they were the ones who started this whole thing, that they said that Allah Akbar, and this is for what you've done to our brothers in Syria and so on. That came from one couple, and it was very, very hard to find their names, but their names was Benjamin and Celia Vial. And he's a producer of a record company called Death Proof Records. And she is the legal advisor to the movie Hannibal Rising, which is exactly in the film where they use this mask again.
Hmm. So this, it sounds like there's some kind of occult dimension here, clearly, where do we go in investigating something like this?
It's very bizarre, and the also many of the people, of the witnesses and so on, they have records that have been released just before this happened. Just weeks before and so on. So they're really in the hot air now. Really in. And also there's some of these crisis actors like Jeannie Watson, one of them. She had an album that just came out on September 11, 9/11.
Really? And wasn't it September 11th, 2015, when the Bataclan was sold from its longtime Jewish owners, sold it to a media conglomerate?
La Garderie.
Yes.
And this media conglomerate, they were also in charge of the stadium. They were also indirectly owning the management company of Eagles of Death Metal. And they were also owning the radio stations and TV stations where many of the people involved as witnesses and so on in these things were working.
Well, James Tracy, the professor from Florida Atlantic University, who's under the process of, they're trying to fire him now due to his investigations of Sandy Hook, has contributed an article to the new book I'm editing, Another French False Flag, in which he looks at the key witnesses in this Paris event. He finds that all over and over, he's finding people who are part of this media conglomerate and related media conglomerates. There are way too many of these witnesses are professional media people who've been set up. Like the photographs are coming from people who flew in at the wee hours of the morning, got set up right outside the Bataclan with a perfect view. And the same people with the same connections are essentially sharing the same photographs and, you know, sharing credit, getting, you know, different people getting credit for the same photograph. All sorts of very, very suspicious behavior, making it look like these media companies, these PR media production companies, may be involved in producing what's essentially a staged event here.
That is exactly my point. We're looking at a theater group here with marketing agencies preparing slogans, logos, all of that is on standby when an operation like this is carried out. Just look at how fast were this whole Facebook thing with where you could put the French flag on your profile photo. That was there within an hour or so.
Just like the Je Suis Charlie logo that appeared miraculously and was blasted all over the world just, you know, very, very shortly after the Charlie Hebdo shootings. It was as if a PR agency had designed the Charlie Hebdo shooting with this in mind, that they were going to put out that logo instantly and blast it to the world using a lot of media money power. And likewise here, it looks like the same thing has happened with the French flag.
It is standard procedure. It is standard procedure. This is how it's done. They got the whole theme. When it was the one in Ottawa, you had the Lassie theme. I call it the Lassie theme. You know, the poor soldier that was killed there, they say, Nathan, whatever his name was. I'm sorry, I forgot his name. There, if you look that one up, there are, I don't know how many photos of this very good-looking soldier that is supposed to have been killed, with dogs with Canadian flags. He's in uniform with, but it's not the same dog. I don't know how many dogs this man must have had, and he's, when you compare the photos, he's got exactly the same haircut, exactly the same way he's unshaven. You know, the length of his whatever you call it, not beard, but just a bit of a scruffy look. They have taken a day out with this guy and taken, like, I don't know how many selfies with different dogs and so on to get the emotions going. Wow. The Lassie theme for Ottawa. Then you have, they take the Charlie Hebdo one. All of these signs that people were holding up in the thousands of all of these photos, all of them, black background, white text, same font. Where did that come from?
Came from a PR agency, obviously.
Exactly. If you have a printer, would you print black background? You know,
that would cost way too much. But I guess if it's the Rothschilds behind it. Let's move on to San Bernardino. We only have about 8 minutes left here. You've seen some parallels between Paris and the San Bernardino sequel, the apparent sequel that happened a little less than three weeks after Paris.
For me, it's like I almost fall asleep because it's so badly carried out. And it's, I don't know how many of these crap operations are they going to do. And here, once again, right in our face, even on the news, they talk about actors. You know, there, I've heard at least three different news agencies when they talk about the deceased actor, that actor, this and so on. I just want to say also that on some of the photos, you know, when you come from, you check out the photos from the Paris event, please look at the what is called the search way to, you know, when you click on a photo and you want to save it, you can see where it is located on the server. And especially the CNN photos, you have like turner.com/CNN News/, I think it's MAPA/assets, and then / the name of the photo. Assets, that is the CIA name for people they use in operations. You know, so the people behind this have not been thinking, you know, they're not aware of that you can see where these photos come from, but, except if you're a nerd like me who are so into the details that find these things. Okay. But also, Chip Tatum, he said that when they do these operations, he has a background in false flags as well, and he said it is business like usual, you know, they have their meetings and so on, and they go through, okay, what kind of effect is it we desire? How is it going to be carried out? They got like a storyboard, all of these things. And then, boom, the operation goes live. They're there controlling the whole thing. And then they have a direct follow-up meeting. And if the effect has not been accomplished, then they do a follow-up operation with a more or less identical theme, but to amp up the emotional reaction so that they can get away with their presenting their solution. So when you had the Woolwich beheading, for instance, in London, they didn't really get the whole thing going the way they wanted. Boom. Just the very next day in Paris, a very, very similar thing happened in Paris to get the impact. And boom, that was enough. And then they could carry on. Here, everybody's looking at Paris. Some of us are looking too deep into it. Distract, San Bernardino. Boom. And okay. Can I just mention also that in one of the songs of the Eagles of Death Metal, which is when you look at this group, it's just unreal. So many weird things about this, also with satanic connections. And one of the songs is Now We Go to San Bernardino. Next Town San Bernardino. It's one of the songs is called that even.
Unbelievable. Shameless. So what are some of the other connections between the two events? You know, what one obvious connection is that white paramilitaries were identified as the shooters at in both places, and yet that this has been completely whitewashed out of the corporate media.
It is. I've hardly been able to focus on that one because as soon as I looked into it, it was just so badly carried out. It's like, I mean, how many of these have I been looking at the last few years, and this one. Oh, God, it's not even the same car that is being chased as the one that is then on the crime scene. You know, and the shoe, oh, God, I'm sorry, you have to speak to someone else.
Give us a couple of your favorite details from San Bernardino.
Yeah, but I have not looked so much into it because right away I felt that I need to keep my focus on Paris because they're trying to distract us here. And so many things went on in Paris that I've kept my focus there. After... I mean, when they start talking so obvious about in the news about the actors and so on, when they don't, I mean, three slip-ups from different news agency, they go in, they let the reporters totally wreck the whole place, the apartment. I mean, they go in there, just turn the whole thing upside down. The witnesses talk about three paramilitary white guys doing the shooting, and right away, a Muslim couple, how did that happen? You know, I mean, how did that happen? I've even posted a photo on Facebook where here is a photo of the three white paramilitary guys seen shooting in San Medina and Bernardino. And the photo is of this Muslim couple.
Right, right. Yeah, especially that little petite, you know, 5-foot-tall, 100-pound girl or woman doesn't really look like a big, strapping, muscular white paramilitary to me. I mean, you have to squint a little bit. And of course, there's the tie-in in both cases of Paris and San Bernardino of really obvious drills. I mean, in Paris, you know, how could you get more obvious than what Patrick Pelou called these multi-location active shooter exercises that were ongoing on Friday the 13th that turned into the real, you know, the so-called real event. And then in San Bernardino, you can't make this stuff up. They say that this happened at a facility for disabled people where they have an active shooter drill every month. You know, Ole, I haven't hung around a whole lot of facilities for disabled people, but I would wager anything that this is the only one in the world where they have an active shooter drill every month. And then it's also the only one in the world that got targeted by supposed ISIS terrorists. I mean, you know, in both cases, it seems, in Paris and San Bernardino, that they're just being way too obvious.
I can only agree. I mean, it's come to a point where it's right in our face. And I think people have suggested that they're not only are they carrying out these operations, but they're also putting a net out there to see who reacts, who has the capability to connect the dots, because that would be a future enemy. I'm not trying to scare people, but I'm thinking from where they come. And so they follow on Facebook and all these social media, seeing who is sharing this type of information, because it's come to a point where it's ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous.
You know, it reminds me of hypnotists who will sometimes run a test to see if their hypnotic subject is still in a deep trance. You know, they want to see if that person is still totally hypnotized. So they'll pull out an onion and say, here, take a bite of this delicious apple. And if the person takes a bite out of the onion and says, that's a good apple, they know that person is deeply hypnotized. And likewise, these guys seem to be, in a way, making what they're doing obvious so they can just see to what extent the population is so hypnotized that it will accept anything that they feed them.
Yeah, that is very possible. Can I just say, Patrick Pelou, you know about this guy. Have you spoken about him
before? Yeah, give us a quick rundown.
Okay, Patrick Pelou was the guy that came out, and he was the first one that started talking about these drills that was ongoing there. And Patrick Pelou, I recognized that guy right away, because in 2011, he was one of the witnesses when the Paris attack, Charlie Hebdo thing was attacked the first time. There was a fire attack there. He was one of the witnesses right outside the building. Then in 2015, in January, when Charlie Hebdo happened, he, who had been writing for the magazine, was at a meeting with first responders, like ambulance drivers, firefighters, and so on. That was right there when after this happened. He was in a meeting with his colleagues right down the road from the Charlie Hebdo office. And then he received a phone call from one of the people being shot at. His friend said, please, please, we're being shot at. Come and help us. So he ran down the road, was one of the first to get into the to the office where they said to have been shot, these people. So he was part of saving their lives, he said, the people there. And then he picked up his cell phone and, as you do, called the president, François Hollande. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't know. Have you got Obama on speed dial? But anyway, this guy called François Hollande, and there's lots of photos afterwards where they're hugging and all of these things. And also, he was then seen many times on TV crying his heart out, you know, how awful it was and so on. So I checked out the guy, and it turns out that he's not just a medical expert, but also he has been in at least two films, major, big movies, one called Bad Girl and the other one Incognito. So it's you can't make it up. It has just come to a point where it's getting ridiculous.
So Pelou looks like he's a member of the traveling terror troupe. And I think we're going to have to leave it at that for now, because we've come to the end of our hour. So thank you so much, Ole Damgaard. I appreciate your excellent work. Your website is Light on Conspiracies. Highly recommended.
And can I just say that the female suicide bomber that blew herself up, she lives and she's well in Morocco.
Live and well in Morocco. Okay, I'll look into that, and I look forward to our next conversation. Thank you, Ole.
You too. Take care.